Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. It's a new year, lots to learn, and lots of questions from you, our listeners. Today, it's Ask the Guys, your questions, our answers, on the Real Estate Guys radio program. All aboard. Registration is now open for the Real Estate Guys 14th Annual Investor Summit at Sea. Imagine spending an entire week with like-minded investors, world-class educators, and real-world professionals. Returning this year are sales legend Tom Hopkins, international developer Beth Clifford, attorneys Mauricio Raoul and Jeffrey Verdon, and the author of The Creature from Jekyll Island, G. Edward Griffin. New for this year, commercial mortgage broker and syndicator Michael Becker, personal development icon Kyle Wilson, and Ken McElroy's partner Ross McAllister. And joining us live and in person for his third Investor Summit, Robert Kiyosaki. It all begins February 26, 2016 in Miami, Florida. Visit realestateguysradio.com and click the tab that says Summit to learn more and reserve your spot. This transformational week is like no conference you've ever attended. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click Summit and make plans to spend a week with the Real Estate Guys and an all-star faculty on the 14th Annual Investor Summit at Sea. Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio show. I'm your host, Robert Helms. With me, as usual, co-host, financial strategist, Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
You know, this is one of our favorite shows.
It is. Ask the Guys.
We do Ask the Guys every 6, 8, 10 weeks, whenever we can, and we could do it every week. We're now to the point where we get enough questions that we could almost do this show every week, although there's so many other things to talk about. But here's the idea. Our listeners, like you, have questions. They can go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys, and we try to answer as many as we can that we feel will have some relevance to the entire listening community, not just one person. We don't answer them individually usually, but here's our only disclaimers. We are not tax or legal professionals. We don't give advice. We only give ideas and information. Your job is to take that and to turn it into actual knowledge by enrolling whatever professionals you need. And we're big proponents of using professionals, and that's how you get things done. So here we go, in no particular order. Number one, this question comes from Edward in Surrey, United Kingdom. So he's in the UK, and he says, and this will ring home because this is true for a lot of people in a lot of places, I have zero money to invest. Can you help me? I live and work in the UK at a very ordinary, low-paid job without a car. Can you help a guy in my circumstances? Well, you know what? Congratulations for having the interest in wanting to invest and recognizing that you don't have much to start with. Almost everybody who does well in real estate investing started with practically nothing.
That's true. And I would say if there's only one thing that you could invest in, it would be your education. And if you were going to focus on one thing to learn about, I would learn sales skills. Because if you learn sales skills, then you can go out and recruit all of the other resources you need. If you know how to sell, then you can find investors. You can make private loans, you can negotiate owner carrybacks. There's all kinds of things you can do if you have the basic skill of knowing how to sell and communicate with people, get deals done. And then number two, some basic concept of how real estate gets done in terms of structuring deals and the benefits, why somebody perhaps would want to carry back or make an investment. Because again, you're going to be brokering your knowledge and your network in order to attract all of the other resources you need.
And the other thing is that you've got a lot of resources that are not necessarily money and income. And although you do have a job, right? So having a job is great. Number one rule, live below your means. Just like you should in any productive society, you earn more than it costs you to live. So you're putting away a little bit. That little bit isn't going to grow at a huge investment very quickly, but it doesn't have to. See, because what you do have is you have more time. Even a full-time job, you still have time that you commit to learning and networking. And listen to the show we did back on the idea of building your network in the new year and figuring out some ways you can add value. Get around to the real estate investors who have the opposite problem you do. They have not enough time and way too many deals and way too much to go do. Figure out how you can help them and learn as you do it.
Yeah, and that's a great way to potentially either earn a little extra money if it's a paying gig or expand your knowledge where maybe instead of paying to be in the room to go to the seminar, you are volunteering. And so you get to hear the material. And even though you're not making any money, you're not spending any money. So there's creative ways to get what you need by bringing what you can. And that's ultimately what it always comes down to, adding value first and then looking for those opportunities. One other thing strategically, Edward, is to think about the people that you would need to get to know. So look for ways to get things onto your experience resume by volunteering with people or working with people that are going to position you more professionally or from an experiential point of view as being better qualified later on. Because in sales, it's not just knowing how to communicate or to negotiate a deal or to uncover someone's needs and match things up. It's your positioning. It's how do they view you. And so when you have things on your resume or you have people in your network who are recommending you or endorsing you, then that becomes part of your credibility. And it may not be as good as having credit in terms of financials, but in terms of opening up doors where you get into relationships, when you have that kind of credibility from people, then it begins to help you access the resources you need until you can have more of your own resources.
And if you are looking down the road to a point where you could qualify for a mortgage to buy real estate, then every job counts. Yeah, it's a low-paid job, but you know what? Don't hop around from job to job to job. If your resume looks like you've been at 10 different places in the last 20 months, that looks very different than if you've been in one place for 20 months. Even if it's not a great job, sticking with it looks good in the eyes of the lender.
It goes back to the idea you're painting a picture. That's what we talk about, building your brand, building your network, and you're painting a picture. You're painting a picture to the lender. One thing you may do is go visit with a mortgage professional and ask them to tell you how lendable you are and if you could make changes, what changes should you make in order to become more lendable, because it's much easier to hit a target when you actually know what it is. Again, these are things that really don't cost you any money. It just takes some time and a notebook, and you go listen, you take notes, and then you go do the things that you can do. And when you start having that action-oriented, can-do attitude, you'll begin to start making some progress. It begins to pick up momentum, and pretty soon you will start feeling not so far out of position. You won't quite feel as despairing. You'll go, wow, really? You know what? Maybe I don't have a great high-paying job. Maybe I don't have a bunch of money in the bank, but I do have a lot to work with, and I'm getting more every day.
And the great news is absolutely this is possible for you. We know so many people that started with less than zero and have been able to acquire portfolios. It just takes time and diligence and doing the thing. And so congratulations on listening to the podcast. Listen to a lot of other stuff out there. It's not just us. There's all kinds of great information available, most of it for free. But a great question, Edward, and good luck to you in the UK. This next question is from Tadas in Lithuania. I wanted to ask you guys, what should I begin to learn about the real estate market in my area? I intend to buy an apartment for life. Maybe what would you recommend? All right. Well, I'm confident that there's a little bit of a English challenge there, but I'm certain that this person speaks better English than we speak Lithuanian.
I would say that's a for sure.
Okay. So this is great. What do you begin to learn about a market in your area? If you're new to real estate investing and you don't know, there's a lot you're looking for. I often say live where you want to live, but invest where the numbers make sense. So just because you live somewhere doesn't necessarily mean that it's a good market to invest in. But it sure could be. So what are you looking for? In a real estate market, you're looking for a couple of macro factors. The first is what we call net migration. Are more people coming into a market or are more people leaving a market? Every single day, people are coming into your market, people are leaving your market. The question is, in which direction is it trending? And then within that, who's coming in? Are there companies locating? Are there jobs coming in? Is there reason for people to be spending more time in your marketplace? Are there what we call drivers that are bringing folks and money into the marketplace? If so, that means the potential exists for rents to go up, for there to be good opportunities to buy investment property. On the other hand, if it's not that kind of a market and your market doesn't deliver those kind of metrics, then you start looking in a larger area. It could be the next town over, the next city or state, right? You start to look at the areas geographically that you can get to. I'm no longer limited by the geography to where I personally invest. But when I was starting, my thing was anywhere I could get in a day would be fine. And so when I started, I invested mostly 150 miles from my house until I realized that a 2-hour drive by car was the same as a 2-hour flight. And there was a lot more real estate I could get to if I was willing to take a 2-hour flight. And again, I'm thinking, can I get there in a day and back? Can I fly in the morning, check out whatever I need to check out, fly back in the day? Today, that's completely gone away, and it's pretty much anywhere on this planet and any other adjacent planet. So you start with what's close because that's what you know. And the kinds of things you want to find out in the market are, what are the jobs like? The people who are paying rent, those people would be your tenants. Where are their jobs? How much are they getting paid? How regularly are they employed? What's unemployment like? What industries are there and how are they paid? There's a lot to find out about the people who are in your real estate market.
Yeah, I get the feeling from the question he might be asking about a personal residence, you know, an apartment for life. This is going to be a place I'm going to buy and a place that I want to live. And then the questions you're going to ask are completely different.
Right.
Because it may not be necessarily about all those other things, although you're going to be interested about the local economy and sure you care about the value of the property. And it's obviously better if you buy a property, you think somewhere down the road I would want to leave. it'd be nice to be able to rent it back out. So all the questions, all those things you mentioned, Robert, are important. But if it's your personal residence, then there's a whole other host of questions, right? I mean, it's, is it where you want to live? Is it where your friends and family are located? Is it a part of the world that you enjoy being in? Is the floor plan, the neighborhood, all the things, and of course, the trend of the neighborhood, is it right for you? So lots of different things to think about. And the biggest thing is, you know, you said apartment for life. And I just wonder, are you talking about buying a property you're planning owning for the rest of your life?
I don't know that I would assume that just based on the disjointedness of this, because he specifically asks about the real estate market.
Yeah.
So that terminology has me think investment. Apartments, also a terminology we think of as an investment, but not all over the world. You can buy apartments in many places. So I think it's okay on either side, right? It's just, Russ brings up a great point. Depending on your use, that's going to dictate the questions that are important, and different uses, different questions.
And if you're married, a happy wife, happy life. Just remember that.
Do it her way.
Do it her way.
But congratulations and hello from Lithuania. Our next question comes from Chris in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Hey guys, I'm 30 years young and want to start investing in revenue real estate. Well, hot dog, that's awesome. I have over $100,000 in savings and no debt. However, the market here in Canada seems to be very expensive and has never had a price correction like the U.S. did in 2008. The pricing of the average rental property in my city goes for around 15 times yearly rental income, or around 3 to 5% ROI. Should I wait for the correction or get started right away? Well, this is great. So before we get to what you should do, and again, we don't give advice, but ideas, we've got a lot of them. Let's talk about this idea of the return. He says, in my city, the rent is 15 times yearly rental income, which we can assume from his note, it translates to a 3 to 5% ROI. There's some big assumptions there.
Yeah. So 15 times is a little bit probably on the high side, even with today's low interest rates. So that's definitely a little bit frothy for income producing real estate. The other thing is just in the big picture with Canada, I mean, right now, the big part of the Canadian economy is oil. And the Canadian economy is going to feel the impact. So I'd be paying a lot of attention. We talk about this quite a bit on the show and on the newsletter and in the blog, because oil is a big story all around the world. And it's especially a big story in a place like Canada.
Not so much in Montreal. Montreal is much more diverse. That's definitely a place that has a lot of different stories and probably less driven by oil. But Canada as a currency, right, for sure.
Well, you've got that going on, so your currency could potentially be a little bit weaker. And real estate is kind of a lagging type of an indicator. You know, when an economy gets strong, then the real estate gets strong as people can afford. When the economy gets weak, real estate kind of hangs on for a while. People don't like to let go of what they think the value is. You know, Robert spent a lot of time selling real estate. One of the hardest times to sell real estate, especially retail real estate, residential real estate, you know, is when you go talk to the homeowner and goes, well, wait a minute, you know, you come back with my comparative analysis and you do the market report. You tell me my house is worth this. Well, a year ago, it was worth this plus 20%.
Right.
Well, that was a year ago.
Yes.
And we're in a different direction, and they don't want to let that go, and they resist. And so there's some of that. So you have to really understand where you're at in the local economy. So real estate timing is a difficult thing to do. It's really more, does the individual deal make sense? Even though a marketplace could be going for 15 times, you may find a unique opportunity. You may find an opportunity where something is being undermanaged, where it could have more income potential, or maybe you can find a way to change the property or the structure somehow, add a room, create a little extra storage space, add an amenity, and you can get more income than the current owner. And all of a sudden that 15 times drops down to more like 12. And then that starts to get more within spitting distance of numbers that make sense. You may be able to find a neighborhood that's in kind of the path of progress and moving up. And maybe you want to stretch a little bit because you believe in this particular location. Sometimes you can find a particular seller that is able to sweeten the deal a little bit. Maybe he needs to get his price for whatever reason, but he might be able to throw something else into the deal that would make sense. It could be personal property. It could be some other set of terms that would work for you. So the idea is that, you know, if you wait for a correction that never comes, then you miss out. A lot of people have criticized some of the perma bears. You know, Peter Schiff gets this all the time, right? Because, hey, gold's going to 5,000. Gold's going to 5,000. Well, meanwhile, it went from 1,700 to, you know, 1,100 or below, right?
Well, he's not wrong yet.
He's not wrong yet, but for the people who were bought in and then took the hit, well, but what if he would have been right? What if it went from 17 to 5,000? Everybody said, well, I'm waiting until it goes back down to 12. The point is, you don't really know.
No, and you can't try to play a correction. I would say this, the best time to invest in real estate was 20 years ago. And the second best time is today. Don't wait. Not only that, there's other places in Canada and in the world where it's not 15 times.
Yeah.
Live where you want to live. Invest where the numbers make sense. When I see a market that is 15 times yearly rental income, I think that's a great, great opportunity to develop property.
Yes.
There's much better returns when I get involved. And I know you're thinking, well, I only have 100 grand. I'm trying to buy my first property. How am I going to develop? You don't have to do the work. You can find a developer who needs what all developers need, capital, and figure out how to partner. There's a lot of hot markets around the world right now where folks are making good money by producing the kinds of inventory that are getting these kinds of returns.
The one thing, Chris, that I like about the question is that at least you're thinking about whether or not it's a good time. And so the one thing that I would say is just be very careful about, you know, I agree with Robert, don't wait, but don't chase. Don't chase the market. Don't try to make a deal be something that it's not. In a market that's a little hotter, you're going to have to do more work to try to find a deal that makes sense. And just don't try to squeeze a mediocre deal in just because you want to get started now. Just work harder, look at more deals, crunch more numbers, look for out-of-the-box ways to make a deal make sense when maybe on the surface it doesn't. See something that somebody else doesn't see, and then that's probably where you're going to end up finding a deal that's going to make sense, no matter what the market. There's always deals in every market, but sometimes they're easy to find, and sometimes you really got to work to find them.
It's Ask the Guys, our first three questions from three different countries. We'll see where they're from next as we return. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. We're the Real Estate Guys. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to the Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you ready to profit in paradise? Hi, it's Robert Helms. And if you think real estate investing means tenants, toilets, and termites, think again. Located just a short plane ride from the U.S., a virtually untouched paradise awaits. The beautiful country of Belize. When you go to Belize with the Real Estate Guys, you'll spend four fabulous days discovering one of the most intriguing real estate markets I've ever seen. With its jungle rainforests, pristine beaches, and 81-degree turquoise water, Belize is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. Plus, it's considered one of the top seven tax havens in the world. Belize property is on the rise, and many experts think the best is yet to come. But don't just take my word for it. Come experience Belize firsthand at our upcoming investor field trip. When you join us, you'll discover the many reasons we love Belize, like tremendously undervalued beachfront land, super low taxes, ease of doing business, and so much more. Get the details at realestateguysradio.com. Just click on events. See paradise for yourself. Click events at realestateguysradio.com, and I'll see you in beautiful Belize.
Hello, Robert Kiyosaki. Listen to the Real Estate Guys. They're wild and crazy, but they really know what they're talking about.
Welcome back to the Real Estate Guys radio program. You're our guest today. It's Ask the Guys and your chance to ask your questions. Of course, we're not, you know, live this minute. If you've got a question, you're going to have to get it in for the next episode. But we do this show every 10 weeks, and we've got some great, great questions this week for sure. This question comes from Dan in Reno, Nevada. He says, I'm messaging you today in hopes that I may get some advice on how to approach a private lender, my parents, in regards to financing my first turnkey real estate investment. I only need a down payment from them as I should be able to finance the rest myself from a mortgage lender. Question, though I can pay my parents back in interest, I would like to know the best strategy for paying them back. For example, option one, should I pay them back the monthly cash flow for an estimated 5 to 6 years until they're paid, which will leave me with the refinance money to invest in another property? Or option two, pocket the cash flow myself and pay them back in whole with the cash out refi. My priority is to start accumulating rental property, so losing the cash flow on the first property to get started is not a big deal if it means that I can use the cash out refi for my next property. I don't know if my debt-to-income ratio will be adequate, though, after refinancing the first property. Thanks for your time. I will try to make this message a little shorter next time. Love the show, and all of the great content. All right, Dan. Well, there is no one way to skin a cat. There's lots of different ways. And although we don't have advice for you, we definitely have some ideas.
Well, I think this is deal making 101. What's optimal for you is going to maybe be a mathematical decision, but what's optimal for the other person may not be what's optimal for you.
Right.
And so if you're going to make a deal, the first thing you have to do is determine optimal is what both parties are willing to do. And so you have to have a conversation with your folks. It's like, hey, guys, you know, what are the options here? And I don't know exactly how we're going to put the deal together, but I want to get all the pieces of the puzzle on the table. So let's just hypothetically say if you had to wait 5 years to get your money back and we did it at a sale or a cash out refi, how would you feel about that? And what kind of return on investment would you want to see? If I were to pay you a monthly payment, is that something you would be interested in? Or, you know, would that create an income tax problem for you? And here's another thing. You have more to work with than just the cash flow or the equity. You also have the tax breaks on the property, depending on how you structure the deal.
Yep.
Sometimes an investment partner is going to be just as interested in getting a tax break. And if you factor in the value of that break into their scheme, it actually sweetens the return on investment without money coming out of your pocket. So that's where you have to understand a little bit about what their criteria is and then involve the appropriate professional who can help you understand it. You also talked a little bit about debt to income ratios, which is great understanding. You just need to make sure that you're working with your mortgage professional, not just today, but projecting forward in these different scenarios, because giving up that, if you promise to give someone a cash out refi and it puts you in a DTI where you can't do the second or third property in your plan, maybe that's something you think you'd be willing to do today. And then you realize, well, gosh, if I do that today, then 2 years, I'm going to be out of position.
Well, that's a great point anyway. Anytime you look at investor financing, when you're trying to finance a property that you're going to hold as a rental property, short-term or long-term, you always want to begin with end in mind. Lenders love lenders. They're very necessary, but they look at the deal on their desk today and they try to close it by the end of the month. They're driven that way. They don't necessarily look at you being the first of 7 or 8 or 9 or 10 or 100 transactions. You need to start with that. Listen, I'm going to buy a house every year. How do we structure my first loan in such a way that I get that win? For instance, a lot of lenders aren't going to want to see a second or third party second on the property, which is what this would be, a loan from your parents. But because it's your parents, it's maybe not documented the same way. I'm not suggesting doing anything that's not legal. I'm just saying parents have more flexibility. You start with the conversation, which is, Mom, Dad, thanks for the help. What's best for you? Maybe it does make sense for you to give them 100% of the income until they're just off and paid, and now you've got the property. That might make sense. But think about the way most people put money to work who are lenders. They put out money, they expect a monthly return that is somewhere in the, you know, 4 to 10% range, depending on the kind of lenders they are. Maybe that works for them. So for sure, no matter who the partner is, what does the partner want to see? What do you want to see? And how do you come to common ground that works for everybody?
Yeah, and part of it is the source of funds, you know, wherever your parents are coming up with the money, because whatever you're going to offer them in their mind is compared to what? What else might they do? Now, because you're their child, of course, they have a vested interest, one would think, in seeing you succeed. And maybe that's good enough. Maybe they say, hey, you know what? I could make a higher rate of return on XYZ investment, but part of the return is seeing, you know, my son Dan get into his real estate investing career, and I want to be a part of that. So again, it goes back to what I said at the top of my comments on this question, Dan, is it's about really understanding the person on the other side of the table and everything that they have to work with, everything that they are looking to get out of the deal, and then you then taking what you have to work with and everything you want to get out of the deal, and then looking at what the deal will actually make available to both of you, and then figure out how to carve out each piece so that everybody gets what they want out of it and everybody can walk away. And some of that's going to be math. Some of that is going to be negotiation and understanding. Some of that is going to require some technical expertise, maybe from a tax advisor or a mortgage broker. But it's actually, this is one of the most fun components of being a real estate investor, is being able to sit down and create these kind of deals, because this is creative real estate. You may not even need to go to a conventional mortgage lender. You may decide not to do that. Maybe your parents or somebody else has better lendability, or perhaps they have other resources. Like, well, gosh, if you're going to pay the mortgage company 4%, I would love to get 4% or 5% secured by a piece of real estate. So why don't I make that a private loan? And now you don't have to worry worry about the down payment. I'll give you the whole thing at 5%.
Now, you bring up another great point, Dan, which is perhaps a nuance, but I think it's worth talking about. And that is this idea that you recognize that you don't necessarily need the monthly payment. You don't need that rent income because you've got the ability to pay for the loan. Too many real estate investors don't think about that. All they focus on is I need to get positive cash flow, and they create a scenario where they go out and get a house, they save up down payment, and they qualify for a loan, and they create $200 a month positive cash flow. And now what? $200 a month is nice, but it's not going to turn you into a wealthy real estate mogul. $200 a month, if you're accumulating that for every house or 300, pick a number, it takes a lot of houses to get to a meaningful number. So the fact that it's not all about the monthly positive cash flow today, by you giving that, in this case, to the lender or your parents instead, is a tool you have. And I think most people should be more creative at what all the tools are. Russ mentioned tax benefits. Again, consult your tax professional, but there may be some ways to make it work out in their benefit and give them that much more reason to want to invest with you. So great question. And if you've got a great question for the Real Estate Guys or even a mediocre question, send it to us. Go to our website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys. This question comes from Diana in Miami, Florida. All right. She's asking about a loan in California. Hi again. All right. Again. Well, hi, Diana. I've written you guys before and you answered my question on the podcast. Thank you. So I'm reaching out to you again. You know, rarely do we let a second one slip through, but this time we will. My friend lives in Arcadia, California, and has a $240,000 combined income with her husband. Great credit, but saving 20% for their down payment has proven tough. Property there is generally more than $600,000, so FHA doesn't apply. Could you guys offer any suggestions as to any other options that may be available to her? Well, we sure can. When you go into an expensive market, whether it's New York or California or even parts of Miami, then you're always up against saving the down payment. Now, what's crazy is you go into Memphis, Tennessee, and the people there also have a hard time saving the down payment, even though it might only be $10,000. So someone making $250,000 has a hard time putting away 20%, half of that, for a down payment. Well, sure. How many people could put away half of everything they make for a down payment? Only the most disciplined. So what's a person to do? Well, in California, there's a lot. In fact, there are particular loans, and you want to have your friend probably talk to a local lender, or though perhaps maybe you're in that business because you seem to know a lot about it, about what local loans may be available. California is one of the states that has some good first-time buyers programs. So we don't know if about the situation here, if they're a first-time buyer, but if they are, that's a potential opportunity. And there's other things to consider.
Well, yeah. I mean, the big strength here is a good credit score and $20,000 a month of documented income. So that's highly leverageable. So assuming that the ratios are fine, it may be possible to actually borrow the down payment from a private lender, not secured by the real estate, maybe by secured by something else on the balance sheet if there is something else, or maybe just a private unsecured loan based on the strength of their credit profile and their income. And then you get those funds. It's a private loan. You stick it in the account. You let it season for however long your mortgage professional tells you it needs to be there. You know, it still needs to show up on your balance sheet as a loan, but it isn't showing up on the property as an encumbrance. And so it, if a lender would not allow a second loan, and a lot of lenders will, so that's not even an issue.
But well, the issue is getting the money up front and then having it attached to the piece of property later. That takes a particular person to be willing to do that.
Yeah. But again, you know, you've got, that's quite a bit of income, even by California standards. And so I would think that you would be able to offer somebody a relatively attractive return, especially if you give them a term that's reasonable, meaning you're not asking them for the money for 30 years. Maybe you're only asking for it for 3 years or 5 years. And that way you're in the property and you're counting on the property going up. Maybe it's a property that you have the opportunity to do what we call force equity. It's a fixer-upper, or it's somehow you can add something or do something to it to make sure that the value goes up, even if the market doesn't go up as fast as you'd like it to.
You know, the challenge with that is that a lot of fixer-upper properties are going to have even less LTV because lenders aren't going to want to be as exposed. So if we're assuming a 20% down scenario, the collateral might not be well enough. What about an 80-10-10? What if you found a seller who was willing to not carry the entire thing, because that doesn't happen very often, but would carry 10%? You know, someone who bought this house that's $300,000 and today's for $600,000, they're going to sell and have whatever gain or whatever that looks like. We don't know if that's an investment property to them or their residence or whatever, but could they take 10%? See, if your friend only had to come up with half as much, would that be doable?
Yeah. So, I mean, owner's equity is always something that you should inquire about. And the way you do it is you ask them, well, what are you going to do with the proceeds? because maybe I can make you an offer that would be just as good or better, backed up by a property that you already know and like, and maybe you'd be comfortable with that. Because if someone's going to go stick the money in a CD and earn, you know, 0.25% or 1% or 2%, and you're offering them 3 or 4 or 5, I mean, that's like triple the return, and that could be very attractive to somebody. The other thing is, if you're buying an owner-occupied property, you know, maybe they're going to say, hey, it's tax-free money to me. But if it's an income property and they're going to realize a capital gain, or if it is over the threshold and they've got more than $500,000 of appreciation in it for a couple, and they're going to be looking at paying a capital gains tax on that, especially in California, maybe they don't want to realize that just now. Maybe they want to wait a little bit. Maybe you can work out a deal with them. Again, this is where you have to have a decent working knowledge of the tax ramifications of decisions, not just for yourself, but for the party on the other side, as we were sharing earlier. So, but it'd be something to look into. Owner's equity is always something you want to ask about.
I think a lease option would be possible. Find a property that they could rent for a year that becomes the potential to be a property they could purchase. That gives them time at a $240,000 income to put that money away, because that's a good income. And I'm sure they're able to save some, but if they can't save the 20%, given a little more runway, a little more time, maybe they could. Maybe a two-year lease option would make sense.
Yeah, sometimes a seller, especially a seller who is either maybe asking a little bit higher price than the market wants to give in an area that maybe isn't selling as fast as some areas are, would be willing to do that because they can get more cash flow today. And even though, you know, let's say, for example, you rent the property, and I'm just going to toss out numbers. Let's say it's a $3,000 a month property at market, but you pay $4,000. But they're giving you $1,000 a month credit towards the down payment. That's really equity buildup to you, and that is receipt of equity to them. Of course, if you don't close, they get to keep that money, which is part of what they're doing. But in the meanwhile, they get the cash flow, and based on your strong income or your friend's strong income, maybe that's something they could swing. And meanwhile, that gives you the opportunity to continue to work on the down payment. So down the road, when you get ready to do the loan to take out the seller completely, you've already got some down payment credit in the transaction from the $1,000 plus whatever else you were able to save up outside of that.
You know, we look at conforming loan limits today. They vary based on the areas of the country. Some are higher, some are lower. In a high area like this, you're going to be right up at the top. I don't make it a habit of staying right up to date on these things, but last I knew it was about $417,000 was the conforming limit. So if that were true, you're not that much more than a 20% here, and maybe it makes sense to figure out some in between. I come back also to just a local lender. Local banks have different lending parameters than the big guys do, and certainly than FHA does. So look around, you know, kiss some frogs and get out in the market and see what's available. But there's just think creatively, which I think we've demonstrated in the last 8 minutes. But there's a lot more, I'm sure. So come out to an event, and let's continue this conversation over a beer. Speaking of which, it's time for a break. When we come back, we're going to play real estate trivia and take more of your great questions. It's Ask the Guys today on the Real Estate Guys radio program.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
Forbes rated Memphis the best cash flow market in the nation. And our good friend Terry Kerr at Mid-South Homebuyers has been the premier turnkey rental property provider in Memphis for over 13 years. With an A-plus rating from the Better Business Bureau, Terry has renovated over 750 houses. Real Estate Guys listeners have snapped up hundreds. Discover what these satisfied investors already know. Mid-South's properties are completely renovated with a one-year warranty and a lifelong rental guarantee. They're affordable, well-managed, and easy to own. Perfect for beginning investors and veterans alike. Get in on the action. Contact Terry and his team via email at midsouth@realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Patrick from Paradigm Life. I've recently written an ebook called The Perpetual Wealth Strategy. The ebook discusses one of the best investments, real estate, combined with a financial vehicle used by the wealthy, many U.S. presidents, famous actors, athletes, and even Houdini himself. You can download the ebook for free in the resources section on the Real Estate Guys Radio homepage. Don't wait. Go download it now.
Hi, this is Lawrence Yun, Chief Economist with National Association of Realtors, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show. It's one of our favorite shows, you know, Ask the Guys. If you have a question for the guys, all you have to do is go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click Ask the Guys and fire away. We love to answer your questions. And speaking of questions, it's time to ask you a question. It's Real Estate Trivia, your chance to win a prize by knowing today's Real Estate Trivia question, which, of course, has something to do with real estate. As soon as you hear the question and know the answer, be the first to get it to us via email, trivia@realestateguysradio.com, trivia@realestateguysradio.com. The first person with the right answer is going to win a copy of Second Chance, the latest book from Robert Kiyosaki. It's a great book. It can be yours if you know today's Real Estate Trivia question. Before we give you this week's question, let's look at last week's answer. Last week on The Real Estate Guys, we talked about various types of equity. And here was our Real Estate Trivia question. Which New York hotel appears in the movies North by Northwest, Funny Girl, The Way We Were, Arthur, The Cotton Club, Brewster's Millions, Crocodile Dundee 1 and 2, Big Business, Scent of a Woman, Sleepless in Seattle, It Could Happen to You, Almost Famous, Bride Wars, and American Hustle? Well, the answer? The Plaza Hotel in New York City. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. Name the largest lake in England. Yep, of all the lakes in England, which is the biggest? What's the largest lake in England? If you think you know or just want to take an educated guess or any other kind of a guess, send it to us to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. Include your name and your physical mailing address so that we can send you a copy of Second Chance, the great book by Robert Kiyosaki. That'll be yours if you're first with the right answer. That's today's Real Estate Trivia question. It's our favorite guest. It's you. Ask the guys. Your questions are answers. This one comes from Arnold in Burr Ridge, Illinois. And he says, what's the best structure for me to use to protect my assets? All my properties are currently in separate LLCs. Should I put these LLCs into a trust? Should it be a domestic trust or international trust? Revocable or irrevocable? What should I do? All right, well, great question, Arnold. And as you've probably heard today, we don't give advice. And best is such an interesting thing to you. Best, what is the best structure? And we've covered this before. The best structure is the one that works best for you. We don't know enough about your personal situation, but we can certainly talk around these various issues you bring up.
So without getting too far into the weeds, a basic structure is you're there at the top of the food chain, and off to the side, you would have a living trust that kind of catches all of your personal property and avoids probate. And any good estate planning attorney can help you understand the benefits of a living trust. You brought up the topic of an asset protection trust, which can be both domestic or foreign. And so depending on how private you want to be, depending on how interjurisdictional or international you want to be, you might consider using a combination of domestic and foreign entities. And again, a good international attorney can help you with that.
Well, and certainly worth some time getting educated about that. You know, part of it is it's a whole order of magnitude more complex when you add an international structure in, but there's a lot of great reasons to do it. So you really have to begin with in mind, if you plan to live all of your days in Illinois and never leave the United States of America, never own anything or create any income outside of the U.S., probably not worth a lot of time and toil figuring out international structures. If, on the other hand, you like to travel, you might consider owning property in other places, you know that it's a big old world out there with a lot of opportunity, then now you have the wonderful benefit of the fact that not every country's laws are the same. Not every asset protection structure is the same. There's a lot you can do, a lot when it comes to not only asset protection, but taxation and privacy. So it's certainly worth getting educated about.
Yeah, I mean, there's so many different ways. This is a complex question. And, you know, Robert, you brought it up great. It's like, oh, best, what is best? Well, I mean, you can really set the thing up bulletproof and it can cost you a fortune, but yeah. You're bulletproof, you're private, you've got everything all set up.
Well, let's use an example, right? A lot of attorneys will say, put every property in a separate LLC, like you've already done here, Arnold. And well, I can see why attorneys would say that. They're in the business of creating LLCs, and that is the most bulletproof. But you know what? Often if I have three or four single family homes in the same neighborhood, I might put them all in one LLC because I don't perceive that there's a huge liability hanging out unless it's a really low risk neighborhood. And they're all about the same kind of asset. They're all in the same neighborhood and I'm comfortable with the risk. I'm just talking personally. So why am I putting in an LLC to protect assets? What else could I use? Insurance. Insurance protects assets. So there's different ways to come out of it. You might say, I want every property in its own LLC and I want that LLC owned by an offshore trust. Okay, you could do that. I might say, I'm going to put four properties in the same LLC. It's going to firewall between the rest of my life, but not within each other because I'm willing to take that risk. So part of it is getting out who you are as an investor and how much risk you're willing to take and how much you're willing to pay to avoid that risk?
Yeah, so it's a combination of asset protection structures, entities like LLCs, and then jurisdictions, and then privacy, and then insurance policies. And those, there's a whole combination of how you put those together. For example, if you have five properties all in one LLC, and there's 100% financing, no equity, there's really not that much to go after except the income streams on the individual properties. And depending on if you use things the way you do the ownership structures, all anybody may end up with is a charging order, which means they realize the tax, but they don't end up getting any of the income. And so that's a whole different structure. It's kind of like this little poison pill that your attorneys can stick inside your deal. So it's difficult to answer the question in great detail, you know, when someone asks a question like best, but I think big picture is the idea that you have living trusts and asset protection trusts, and then underneath that you have holding companies that don't do any business with any third-party people. Because when you do business with third-party people, that's where you create a liability a port or a door, a way they can get to you. And then you have operating companies and management companies, and the operating companies would be these individual LLCs, and you might have one management company with a directors and officers or as an emissions insurance policy that is operating all of these different LLCs, each one holding an individual property, and each one of those properties would have a commercial general liability policy, which would cover you against the slip and falls and some of those types of things. They would trigger a defense. And if somebody went after the holding companies or the managers, meaning you, then that's where your directors and officers insurance or your errors and omissions insurance would kick in. So you have insurance that are funding your defense. You have insurance policies that can pay out a settlement. And on top of that, you can use a technique called equity stripping. And that's where you might have a separate holding company somewhere else put a lien on your property for the full amount of the equity. So when someone does an asset search on the property, they go, oh, well, this property doesn't have any equity in it. There's a first lender and there's a second lender, which means that I would be third in line at best, and there's nothing to go after. You know, someone who takes the time to sue you and get you all the way through that they win, and then they do what's called an order of examination to have you reveal where everything's at, they're going to find all that stuff. But the person who isn't going to find it easily is the opportunistic attorney who's just running around looking for properties with bunches of equity that they can go after easily. You just don't want to be having your assets hanging out there uncovered, you know, where people can take a shot at them. So if you use privacy, if you use insurance, you use asset protection, and you use multi-jurisdictions, you make it very, very difficult for the opportunistic, lazy, predatory people to come after you. The only people that are going to get you are going to be, you know, the government if they're coming after you for taxes, or somebody who really has a solid, legit claim that they're going to push all the way through this whole structure and then have you come reveal where everything is.
And two parties really need to be involved in helping make this decision. Obviously, your tax attorney, and that may be a separate attorney than the person who sets up your entities, but then also your estate planner, whoever's going to help you with that, because that has a lot to do with this too. Good question, Arnold. It's Ask the Guys today. Your questions, our answers. More when we come back. I'm your host, Robert Helms. We're the Real Estate Guys.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com. If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Hi, this is Doug Casey, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program, heard every weekend on this great radio station all the time at realestateguysradio.com. You go to iTunes and listen through hundreds of past podcasts, if you have no life. And you can probably find lots of great Ask the Guys episodes. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, go to our website at realestateguysradio.com. Click Ask the Guys. This question comes from Dave in Mountain Home, Idaho. Hey, guys, I'd like to find out the best way to find equity partners for our manufactured home community investments. We have two projects in Montana and one in Colorado. All three are C-quality projects that need better management and a few homes brought in to fill up the vacancies. The initial cash flows are approximately 10% and will go up to about 18% over 3 to 5 years. Any ideas in today's world? Thank you, Dave. Well, Dave, yeah, here's the deal. There is lots of money out there, and this is the kind of opportunity people are interested in, right? Kind of a value-add opportunity. Certainly, mobile homes and manufactured housing have good returns as an asset class, so pretty easy to find money for those deals. In fact, we have a couple of students that do exactly this, mobile home parks in little cities all around the United States, and they're offering, you know, 18% return, 16% return, 21% return. So yeah, you can go out and find money for that. Where? Probably not institutions.
Yeah, exactly. It's really interesting because there's that best again. What is the best way? The best is whatever works best for you.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, it's going to come down to building your brand and building your network, something we talk about all the time at the syndication seminar. It is getting to a place of professional positioning where people believe that you're credible, that you know what you're doing, that you do quality projects, that you're a reputable business person, someone that they can invest with. So you start by building that up. You show people who are credible, like CPAs and attorneys and people that have networks of high net worth people, and you begin either retaining them to help you with your own practice, because now it just is the nature of networking. Business people refer other business people to business people. So the more people you have on your team, the more likely they're going to bring people to the party. And so you begin to do that. The other thing is you learn how to tell your story. You get good at telling your story. You may go to join investment clubs or go different places where there are investors, and you begin to tell your story and you start getting really, really good at it, so you can explain to people why what you're doing makes sense, why it's compelling, why it's interesting. And so now you've got some good endorsements, you've got some good professional communication skills. Now you have to think about the kind of people that you want to be partners with, because if you're looking for private investors, these people are going to be your partners. They may not be voting partners, they may be limited partners, and hopefully they will be, but nonetheless, they're going to be people that you have a degree of accountability to, you're going to have to interact with. And so you have to decide what kind of people you want to do business with. Now you got to figure out, once you figure out who those people are they? Where do they congregate? They do. Their eyeballs congregate somewhere. Somewhere they socially congregate. It could be a Rotary Club. It could be a networking event. And here's the great news. It used to be, until just a few years ago, that you were not even able to advertise. But today you can. We've been talking about this for quite a while. In fact, we have a report on this in our special report section. I believe you can get it if you send an email to monopoly@realestateguysradio.com, because the new law that has come out, it basically allows you to go out and advertise these types of opportunities to accredited investors. And then recently we did a show with attorney Mauricio Arold about how even non-accredited investors, it's beginning to open up. So the ability for someone who has a credible deal to go out and find investors with whom you did not have a prior relationship from a legal perspective is opening up. But that doesn't mean you still don't have to work on your brand and your reputation and your ability to communicate your offer. And of course, that means you've got to have an offer that's compelling. And so if you take the time to go meet with a few people, and instead of trying to pitch them the deal, you ask for their feedback. Say, hey, here's what I do. Here's how it works. Here's how I'm thinking about putting it together. What do you think? What kind of questions do you have? What kind of returns do you think people out there would be interested in? Some of the people whose opinion you ask for are actually going to want to invest.
Sure.
You're not really trying to sell them. You're trying to get their opinion. And if that's all you get out of it, you've won. But you may end up getting a lot more than that.
If this is more than just three properties, if you're thinking about doing more of this, Dave, I think I would strongly recommend you come out to the Secrets of Successful Syndication. It's two full days and a big workbook and a lot of great faculty. Not only that, the people that come to the syndication event are top notch. It's amazing. We are humbled every time at the great people we meet that are already doing deals, and many that have a lot of property in their own account and are looking to, you know, get to the next level by raising capital. You'll meet great people. You'll get all kinds of great advice. And who knows, maybe you'll find another few folks in the same space that can give you some ideas, right? I know of a couple of guys who are going to be at the syndication seminar who do exactly what you're doing, and they've raised money to do it. So that would be a great place to go meet folks like that. But good good stuff. Those deals are absolutely doable. Time for one more question today. This comes from Laura in San Diego. She says, you and your podcast are awesome, and I listen to every show religiously. Well, thanks a lot, Laura. I would like to get your opinion on the drought situation in San Diego, California, and how it may change San Diego in general and real estate markets specifically, you know, prices for both rents and sales in the short and long term. What are the best strategies, there's best again, for real estate investors to hold rental properties long term if it was planned originally, or sell everything and run away from San Diego before it runs out of water and becomes a desert? Thank you. Well, Laura, in case not everyone is up to speed on this, San Diego is one of many cities that faces a little bit of a drought issue in the fact that they are running out of water. Now, having said that, do we think, as the real estate guys, it is going to turn into a desolate desert and no one will ever want to go there again? Not very likely. Here's the reality. If the business people and stakeholders in San Diego have to ship water in one-pint bottles, they will get this problem solved. We've seen this happen again and again. We've seen this happen in multiple markets. I remember more than 10 years ago when Las Vegas, Nevada had the same exact issue and they were running out of water and developers weren't even getting permits because there weren't going to be water rights. Guess what? Today there's plenty of water in Las Vegas. It's thriving. It's all good. I'm not trying to make light of the issue. I'm trying to say, don't be alarmed about it and don't say I've got to cut and run and get rid of everything before it becomes a desert. Now, just looking at where the market is price rise, who knows? Maybe you'll look like a hero 2 years from now if you sell everything you own in San Diego today. Don't know.
I think the big picture is there's a lot of things to worry about, and I probably worry about as much as anybody there is. You know, I mean, I listen to everybody. I try to take everything seriously. And then you just have to ask yourself what's most likely. And it always comes down to this notion that when you have a major economic population center, and you have a key piece of important infrastructure, and it's hard to imagine anything much higher on the food chain than water as far as being an important piece of infrastructure, there is enormous resource and political will to fix the problem. Water exists somewhere. I mean, think about it right now. We have gone back and forth with this Keystone pipeline, right? The idea that there's tons and tons of oil way up north, and all we got to do is get that pipeline built over how many thousands of miles to bring that oil from where it is to where it's needed. There's water in this world. It may not be in Southern California, but there's a big enough population base and economic base that they will build a pipeline. Probably not one-pint bottles, right? They're going to build a big pipeline to get it where it needs to be. Not to mention San Diego's right on the ocean.
Hello.
There are people that have manufactured desalination plants. There are entire populations, islands, you know, where you get fresh water and it comes straight from the seawater.
The entire island of Grand Cayman is desal, and it's desal by a publicly traded company, and the water is of high quality. It's wonderful, and it's easy to do. Plus, there's so much beer produced in San Diego. They go through a lot of water there. I can't imagine that they're not going to want to brew more of their great hopped ales with more water. So, you know, you just got to look at whatever the risk you think is. I think San Diego's a great marketplace for a lot of reasons. I also think it's high up there, right? The prices are high. So,
well, I think the thing is, whatever thing that you're concerned about, what you need to do is figure out the people who are qualified to have an opinion on the matter. You know, in this case, it could be people in the water community. It could be people who are, you know, involved in civil engineering and planning. I mean, I don't exactly know who, but you study the issue for a little while, you're going to figure it out pretty quickly. And once you figure out who's qualified to have an opinion, then try to understand what agenda they may have in swinging their opinion one way or the other, and listen to a lot of different people, and then sit down and think about what really makes sense to you. If you really believe in your heart of hearts that it's on its way to become a desert wasteland, then absolutely the best strategy for you is to sell everything and get out of Dodge. If like us, you think, you know, that's probably not a very likely scenario, then pay attention to it, but then turn your attention to other things that are more likely to help you make good investing decisions going forward.
We have some great investor friends who own more than a dozen properties in San Diego and are looking to acquire more, and they'll be with us on the 14th Annual Investor Summit at Sea. You can pick their brain. They're going to do a roundtable discussion about their properties in San Diego, and I promise they're up to speed on this issue. So come on out to the Investor Summit at Sea. There's still a couple of cabins left. Join us Join sales legend Tom Hopkins. Join best-selling financial author in history, Robert Kiyosaki, all live, all in person at the Investor Summit at Sea. You can get all the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com. Big thanks to all the folks who submitted questions, whether we got to them today or not. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, get to the website, realestateguysradio.com. Click Ask the Guys, and maybe next edition of Ask the Guys, we'll answer your question. Until next time, go out and make some equity happen.
Hello, this is Robert Kiyosaki, and I'm very excited that I'll be joining the Real Estate Guys for their Investor Real Estate Summit at Sea. Join me, join my friends, join the Real Estate Guys Investor Summit at Sea, and I'll see you out there. Thank you very much.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723, extension 4. That's 888-489-7723, extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.